Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Floods, extreme snowfall, storm surge, and high winds. These events are occurring more frequently and causing major damage. What will it take to prepare communities for the increasing potential of intense storms, wildfire, drought, and sea level rise? How much trust is there in the forecasting models? We'll discuss using science to inform future policy for climate change adaptation today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. The New York Times reported this morning that the 8 warmest years on record have now occurred since 2014. The scientists from the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service said 2016 remains the hottest year ever. Although we know the planet is warming overall, that doesn't mean there won't be extra cold periods, extra dry, extra wet. It's global weirding, which makes things harder to understand and maybe harder to predict. My brother, who moved to California a few years ago to escape rainy Wrangell in southeast Alaska, sent me photos yesterday of mudslides flooding down the hillside right next to his home. Up until this recent series of storms, he was afraid the Ojai Water Reservoir would disappear. They've been on water restrictions for years, and they nearly lost their home to wildfire a few years back. And certainly in Alaska, we've seen records set and broken for snowfall, rain, and life-threatening fierce Arctic storms caused by a typhoon. So how should we plan and prepare for the future? What do government officials need to have in order to help ensure communities are safe and lives aren't lost when the next big storm hits? Here to help us better understand what goes into modeling for climate and weather and what the future may hold is Brian Brettschneider. Brian is in the studio with me today, and he is a climate scientist with the National Weather Service, Alaska Region. Hello.
Good morning, Lori.
Thanks for being here. Also on the line from Fairbanks is Rick Toman. Rick is a climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy at the International Arctic Research Center at UAF. Hello, Rick.
Good morning, Lori and Brian.
And you Alaskans can also join our conversation today. Is your back still sore from shoveling snow or from clearing mud from your home? What are you most concerned about for the changing climate? How do you think we need to prepare for the future? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Brian, I want you to start us off here. The Times story today also noted that overall the world is now 1.2 degrees Celsius, 2.1 degrees Fahrenheit, hotter than it was in the second half of the 19th century. These findings from that European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service, Carl Bontempo, the director of the service, said the underlying warming trend since pre-industrial age made 2022's ranking in the top five neither unexpected or unsurprising, he said. The rare event now would be to see a really cold year. This sounds dire. What should we take away from this data?
Yeah, and that news is really hot off the press. It just came out either today or yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty much without even looking at data from here on out, the rest of your life, you can imagine the story at the beginning of the next year being this: the last year ranked in the top 5 or 10 warmest years on record. You know, you can just kind of expect that will be a new story every year from here on forward. And, you know, there's there's a lot of great data, a lot of great modeling that supports the our understanding of how the climate system works and why we're seeing these trends. And we do have variability from year to year. You know, we're just finishing our third, or we're entering our third La Nina winter in a row, which has a dampening effect on global temperatures. Yet still, we're still near the warmest year on record, even with this major internal part of the system that is keeping temperatures a little cooler than it otherwise would be.
Mm-hmm. Rick, turning to you now, the AP also just this morning reported that costly weather disasters pounded the nation with 18 climate extremes that totaled more than $165 billion. That's an estimate from federal climate scientists. 2022 wasn't near record hot for the U.S. It was the third wildest year nationally in numbers of extremes. It cost more than $1 billion and in overall damage and at least 474 deaths. Rick, your thoughts here about how we should interpret and take in this information and what leads to the way forward.
Well, it was quite interesting to read that report. While this year was not the most damaging in that sense, 2020, 21, and 22 are now the top 3 years. And it really highlights what we've seen here in Alaska, where these extreme events, whether it's extreme precipitation, extreme snowfall, extreme heat. Not many people have forgotten the summer of 2019 yet in South Central Alaska. These kind of events are just coming at us, not quite nonstop. It seems that way sometimes, but it's really a sign of the future. There is no reason to think that when we look at over several years that there's going to be any returning to a more quiet weather pattern. Sure, we might get that for a year, and certainly individual regions will see that, but this is our future.
Well, and following up there, you had said in an earlier interview that yes, we should expect that extreme weather will become more common. That's not happy news, but how do you think people should think and prepare for that future?
Well, in the best case scenario, we can use what's happened here in Alaska over the last few years as really a wake-up call, or as a constant reminder, our Indigenous elders always are telling us, for years have been telling us, we need to prepare not just for the best case scenario, but prepare for bad things to happen. And we have seen what that means. All around the state has had their share of these extreme weather events. And I think that because it's fresh in people's memories, that, that's the time to act. So from individual households to community levels, tribal levels, preparing for things that we have seen, and then prepare for it being a little bit worse, seems like a pretty straightforward step. Now, that's of course much easier said than done. At all levels, there's budgetary constraints and a desire to maybe just skate by. But we have seen what happens, and we know it's going to happen again. We don't know exactly when, but we can be sure that it will happen again.
Brian, just a few minutes ago, you were talking about La Nina, the weather pattern that normally indicates cooler temperatures. It's stuck around for three consecutive years. How unusual is this, and what do you think may happen when El Nino returns?
Well, going back to, say, 1950, this is the third time that there's been back-to-back-to-back La Ninas. And if you cull the data a little bit more, say, going back to the beginning of the 20th century, there may be like two other events. So it's quite uncommon. It's not unprecedented. It's not super extraordinarily rare, but it is fairly uncommon. And speaking with other climate scientists, there's almost a kind of a universal acceptance that the next time we have an El Nino, we're going to probably blow past 2016 as the warmest year on record. And so So La Nina does tend to mask the kind of the global trend a little bit, or at least suppress it. But once we get back into more typical sea surface patterns, we should expect the that global average temperature to spike back up again in the same trajectory it had been prior to this current La Nina. And just for the benefit of people that may not realize where this La Nina area is, it's part of the Central Pacific Ocean, just east of the international date line, kind of straddling the equator. And it's an area that we monitor for changes that kind of reflect and cause broader scale changes to atmospheric circulations and, you know, where the jet stream sets up and where rainfall patterns change. So it's this one area in the Central Pacific, even though no one lives there, it has a big influence on kind of large-scale weather patterns, you know, really at a hemispheric scale.
And if if we see El Nino return, excuse me, if and when El Nino returns, then that exacerbates that feedback loop, right, as far as heating the ocean, and that will lead to or potentially leads to more extreme fall storms and...
Right. So, you know, so functionally, when you have a La Nina, some of the warmth is kind of sequestered farther down into the ocean. So when you get the El Nino, it kind of liberates that up to the surface. And then once it gets to the surface, it warms the atmosphere around it. And the impacts as far as storms go are different depending on where you are in the world. And so in some areas, you're going to have, you know, in a La Nina year, you're going to have kind of a predisposition to more storminess based on where, say, the jet stream sets up. You might have, say, more Bering Sea low pressures. You might have more recurving typhoons from the Western Pacific. And so, you know, so there's this kind of cascading influence of impacts that occurs because these tropical Pacific Ocean waters change in their temperature profile from year to year.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about extreme weather and what the future may hold with experts in the area. Brian Brettschneider is a climate scientist with the National Weather Service Alaska region and is in the studio today. Rick Tolman is a climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy at the International Arctic Research Center at UAF and is on the line from Fairbanks. You can join our conversation if you have questions or concerns about what the future holds for the state and what you can do to help mitigate and adapt to a changing climate. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. The local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, we've got big, egregious examples of change, snowstorms, Murbach, record rainfall in Juneau. But are the smaller, less dramatic, but steady, rapidly changing norms that are just kind of cooking along, is that, like, for guys like you, Brian and Rick, let's start with you, is that the bigger concern, or how do you see these things?
Well, I think, Lori, unfortunately, it's all a concern.
Sure.
That's one of the difficulties with our changing environment. These extreme events, you know, really get our attention. They impact our lives immediately. They keep us from doing things. They can be life-threatening. They can be severely damaging. But the day-in and day-out changes add up over time. And so while we talk about, say, a few degrees of warming over the last 50 years across much of Alaska, maybe 5 degrees of warming over 50 years, well, that doesn't sound like very much, but the impacts over those 50 years become enormous. But we have, because it's not immediately in our face every day, sometimes can be hard to wrap our concern around when there's so many other things demanding our attention. So it's these impacts over multiple timescales, from the winds that are happening at this very instant to thawing permafrost because the temperature's been warming for 100 years. All of these ultimately will impact and demand that we make adjustments and take actions, but they're at very different timescales, and that is very, very difficult to keep all of those balls in the air at the same time.
Well, and then when a huge event happens, people are like, wow, where did that come from? But of course, it's been building quietly in the background, maybe not so quietly for folks such as yourselves. But Brian, when you think about the policy implications, too, it's easy to draw attention to the need for money to support adaptation and mitigation when there's a huge catastrophe. But then in between those times, when really the work should be being done, how hard is it to get that message to the people who have the purse strings?
Well, you know, and to follow on with what Rick said, the you know, it's a little bit like a the frog in the pot of water where you're slowly turning up the heat. You know, if you look at, say, you know, what would an average year or a normal year in Anchorage be? It would be about 37.8 degrees based on the last 30 years. If you take that average year now and you put it back, say, 50 years ago, it would be in about the top 20 or 25% warmest, you know, percentile. So it would be, what we consider now to be average would have been really warm, you know, even just several decades ago. And that's not just true for Anchorage. That's true for most places. And, you know, in human lifespans, you know, we become accustomed to what we experience, you know, in the last few years, in the last decade or so. And so it can be easy to lose the perspective that, oh, this isn't what it used to be like. This isn't really normal. This isn't, you know, this is a historical outlier, what feels typical now. So, you know, we become acclimated and even complacent in relatively short time spans. But it is important for people to you know, to take the 20,000 foot view and to kind of step back and say, this is kind of where our current climate fits into this kind of this historical record. And when you realize that things are quite a bit different than they used to be, and you're able to demonstrate that and point that out, I think it really helps people in the decision making process.
Is it still possible to accurately say average snowfall, average rainfall, average temp, or is the concept of average just sort of blown up and gone?
Well, that's a good question. And depending on which, you know, climate variable you're looking at, you're always behind the curve. So, for example, when we look at, you know, what's the average amount of sea ice that we would expect on this date, on January 10th? Well, depending on, you know, if you say, well, look, what was it over the last 50 years? Well, it's much reduced since then. How about the last, you know, 20 years? It's, you know, we're already behind the curve on that. And so so average, normal, almost has no meaning in those contexts. For other things like temperature, you know, we're behind the curve as well. And, you know, our current technique is to use a 30-year period. In this case, it's 1991 to 2020. Well, we're already, you know, we're still nudging upward. And so that's already a little bit behind the curve. But then if you say, well, let's just look at the last 10 years. Well, you can have lots of noise that can be hard to disentangle from the actual signal. So it is kind of an intractable problem. You know, other things are have a little bit less issues with that kind of, you know, statistical, you know, trends being dominating the signal. But it's a great point, and that is that, you know, we're always kind of behind the curve on saying this is what it should be like, because it should be relatively stable, and it's not.
Rick, something that I struggle with is the amount of precipitation. Is it true that a warming climate doesn't mean more precipitation, but rather a different distribution of the same amount of precipitation happening in a shorter window of time? Or are we going to actually see more uptake of moisture into the atmosphere and more precipitation overall?
So, Lori, for our part of the world, a warming environment, particularly the warming oceans and increased evaporation from this warmer water into the atmosphere, the climate scale models are all in agreement that the total amount of precipitation over the course of a year, everywhere in Alaska at our latitude, will be increasing. Now, that does not mean there won't be changes in the seasonality of the precipitation. For instance, there is a considerable body of work that suggests that at least southern southeast Alaska will trend towards drier summers. You might call having a more of a, say, Pacific Northwest climate than they do now, even as the total precipitation increases. Well, if summer precipitation is decreasing and the total yearly precipitation is increasing, that means the other times of the year would be getting wetter. For most of Alaska, though, all the seasons can expect to have more precipitation, but some of that is going to come in these extreme events. Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, in the last 2 years, each of those major population centers have now set their highest observed annual precipitation on record in the last 2 years.
Well, that's making me concerned about my old house and my old roof again after what we saw in December. For Anchorage, the Chugach Mountains, and Brian, maybe you can talk a little bit about this. The Chugach Range usually protects us from the heaviest snow in Prince William Sound. After the three big storms in Anchorage that we saw in December, does it appear that the mountains aren't going to save our bacon as much in the future? I'm kind of scared about this.
Well, in that case, you do still need a relatively tight set of environmental atmospheric parameters that all have to kind of come together in just the right spot for Anchorage to get those big snows. Not always, but usually. So Rick did a great analysis looking at precipitation for the month of December regionally, and while Anchorage easily broke their monthly record, many areas not far from Anchorage, had pretty ordinary amounts of precipitation for the month of December. So there really was kind of a bullseye, or kind of a stretched line bullseye, if you will, over the western Chugach area. If we have a good southeast flow, typically, like you said, the Chugach Mountains will intercept that moisture, and we get not a lot. That's why, Whittier gets 150 inches of precipitation a year, and Anchorage gets 17, thanks to the mountains there. So, but to follow up on something Rick said, with the changing climate, in addition to changing seasonality, if we have a changing, say, mean position of where the jet stream sets up, we may end up with a situation where, we're not getting that southeasterly flow as dominant as it is typically, and maybe there's a slightly different orientation, and that's going to that could potentially have a big impact on total precipitation for areas that are normally rain shadowed, if you will.
Brian, you said in an earlier interview that very unlikely events are more likely. Formerly impossible events are now possible. What does this mean? Give us some examples.
Well, one of the things that's really tough when explaining or trying to talk about extreme events is any individual event, it is a challenge to do, say, an attribution study. Did this event, was it caused by climate change, or was that event caused by climate change? But when we look at collections of events, when we look at the distribution of events, what we've seen is that distribution, if you remember back to, say, high school and your normal curve, your bell curve, that's now shifted a little bit, or in some cases a lot. And so things that happen on the tail of that distribution, unlikely events, now are more likely, at least on one side of that distribution. And things that were almost impossible based on the distribution of events are now possible in many cases. So for example, the big Pacific Northwest heat dome in 2021, some really careful attribution studies were done. And even though it's still, even in today's climate, it's an uncommon event, something that might only happen every 100 or several hundred years. Without a warming world, it was considered almost impossible. And so in that case, things that we didn't used to think could even happen Now we have to kind of put that in our toolbox of things that could happen.
One thing that isn't changing, Rick, you noted in an earlier interview, is astronomy. So what does that indicate for a dynamic climate? Anything?
Well, that's actually really important for Alaska and places at high latitude, because the astronomy is not changing. We, no matter what the climate is doing, no matter how the averages change, we will still have a period over mainland Alaska in the month or two, depending on your latitude, around winter solstice, when there is no effective heating. That isn't going to change. Conversely, in the summer, you know, the days will still be very long, or up, you know, to the 24 hours of sunshine. So that is not changing. And the big changes between the winter and summer solstice will remain. And that will greatly modulate how things work in our warming climate. So just to use an interior example, we have pretty good evidence that autumn snowfall is decreasing in the interior, actually in much of Alaska, because more of the precipitation is falling as rain. But by the time we get to Halloween, there is no, the amount of solar heat energy being received is negligible. And that means whenever it's clear, the ground, the snow pack is gonna lose heat to space. And if it's raining instead of snowing, that greatly increases the chances of ice on roads, where the same kind of event in, say, September might not have been a problem. By the time you get to Halloween, it's a big problem because the astronomy is not changing. We're not getting any more heating from the sun. So that will be a big factor for Alaska in a way that is less of a concern, say, for the lower 48, where they get much more sun in the wintertime.
We had a question by email from Janice, who writes, "Hi, Rick and Brian. Do the effects of La Nina reach into interior Alaska? If so, are those impacts felt primarily in certain seasons, or can they be felt throughout the year?"
That's a great question. And when we talk about, you know, oceanic factors like La Nina, sometimes, you know, when you're far from the ocean, it may seem like that those aren't really impacting you. But what we see is La Nina, El Nino, they affect the atmospheric circulation really for the entire hemisphere. And so everyone kind of feels the impact of that, if you will. And, you know, if you look, say, statewide in La Nina winters, pretty much the entire state, more times than not, is a little cooler than normal, or sometimes a lot colder than normal. And that's true in southeast and south central and interior, west coast. Really, that applies to everybody. Precipitation is not quite as strong, but precipitation signals are messy to begin with, and so sometimes it's harder to disentangle the cause and effects. But yes, to answer the listener's question, there is similar impacts to interior, to really to all parts of state, depending on El Nino, La Nina conditions. And in El Nino conditions, Alaska is very reliably warmer than normal. So once we break free of this La Nina, you know, our not so warm winters, the last few winters, I would expect those to turn around and have much warmer conditions.
And along those same lines, and if there are more warmer conditions, do you anticipate that we'll see more enormous snowfalls and more precipitation?
Well, one of the things about snowfall is, you know, when we warm up the atmosphere, as Rick noted, it can hold more moisture. And so if the temperature is below freezing, you can actually end up with more snowfall. And what we've seen in many places in Alaska is in the core winter months, December, January, February, we've actually been able to maintain, for the most part, the amount of snowfall that we've historically received. But on the edges, on the shoulder seasons, in the fall and late in the spring, we've seen a notable decrease in snowfall, as a lot of that precipitation is now rain and not snow. And so, you know, so for the time being, We're holding on in most of the mainland for snow. Now, that's not the case for Southeast because they're already closer to freezing. So as you approach that freezing line, every little bit of warming makes rainfall much more likely than snowfall. So our future in Alaska is definitely going to be for less snow and more rain in the winter months.
And probably more ice for at least some years.
Definitely more ice because, as Rick noted, with the fact that the amount of daylight is not going to change, with effectively no solar heating for a period of time in midwinter, if you do get rain, you're going to have you're going to have radiational cooling at night. It's going to with a frozen ground, you're going to have icy conditions. It'll be a mess.
Well, on that cheery note, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our guest experts, Brian Brettschneider and Rick Tolman, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing extreme weather and what it may indicate for the future in Alaska with our guest experts, Brian Brettschneider, who is a climate scientist with the National Weather Service Alaska Region, and Rick Tolman, climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy at the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. You can join our conversation if you have questions or comments or want to know what you can do to help adapt and mitigate. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So we're going to go to the phones for just a moment here. We have Stu in Muldoon who has a question about the rate of change. Hi, Stu.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The rate of change, well, obviously things are changing, but as time goes on, will the rate of change increase as well? And what does that mean about all our carbon footprint issues and how hard it's going to be to turn things to something a little more functional for us by fixing things if possible?
All right. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think there's a couple of ways to think about it. First, the climate of Alaska, is a result of our global climate. But we also have sea ice around us. And the reduction of sea ice the last few decades has had a dramatic effect on the climate of Alaska. And so much so that there's really been a kind of a full regime shift in many ways. In the fall, where there used to be ice and now there's not, it's much warmer. So we see in some seasons, in some parts of the state, 6, 8, 10 degree change. Well, that's not going to go on forever because at least for those parts of the state and that time of the year, the ice is already functionally gone. So we've already kind of incorporated that change in there. From a bigger picture, we are seeing some the global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and some of the worst case projections of emissions and warming, we feel like are kind of off the table now, not because they were poorly understood, but because meaningful changes have already begun taking place globally. And so, you know, as far as the rate of change, you know, if we can, you know, if we can take out the factor of the local effects of changes in sea ice in the margin seasons, I would expect that the trend would continue, but maybe at a slightly decreasing rate.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Stu, and for the answer, Brian. Rick, I think both of you have said that you're trying to do more engagement with communities and people, helping to educate and bring this information to the public. Talk about this work and what your aim is with this type of engagement. You have a newsletter now, the Alaska and Arctic Climate Newsletter. Tell us about that and who the target audience is. Rick, you want to start us off?
Sure. So, you know, here at the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, you know, we're always working to try to get the best information, the best climate science information to help people make informed decisions. And those might be individuals, tribes, communities, state leaders, national leaders. And we really strongly believe that having accurate, authoritative information presented in a way that people can understand and use and that address the concerns that they have as they're thinking about the future for themselves or their community is really the way forward. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking here with my newsletter. Again, getting that accurate information out there so that people have that. And in particular, that newsletter is kind of focused mostly on what's happened in and around Alaska. And I think it's really a useful venue for people to stay informed in what's happening and without all the hate to use it, the clickbait type headlines, but rather getting accurate information out there so that becomes one more piece of the puzzle that people can consider when thinking about their future.
And for both of you, talk about how you parse out weather events from climate change. Weather, of course, happens, but it's not all connected to climate change. It's just the weather. How can people understand that and kind of separate out the two?
That is a really big challenge, you know, because the weather is, like you said, it's what happens every day. But it happens kind of on top of the climate, or I mean, it's integrated with it. But, you know, but if you step outside today, are you experiencing the weather or the climate? Now, I would say you're experiencing both. You know, there's, you know, if you didn't know what the forecast was in Anchorage or Fairbanks tomorrow, you would still know that it's not going to be 90 degrees. Because you have an understanding of the climate, you may not know if it's going to be windy or cloudy, but you do have a feel for the climate, and it is really difficult. So, for example, the week of Christmas in the Lower 48, they had a significant cold weather outbreak. You know, many areas were 45 degrees below normal, and you know, you see all the comments of people online. You know, what global warming, and you know, where's my global warming? But, you know, if you look at, say, a 30-day period just surrounding that, they're actually warmer than normal. And that's warmer than the new normal, which is warmer than the old normal. And so it is a challenge, but it's not an insurmountable challenge. You know, the more we talk about it and the more we engage with people, you know, people are smart. They understand that, you know, what they're experiencing one day isn't necessarily the climate, that they understand that that's weather, and that they're generally very responsive to, you know, to discussions about variability and changes and time periods. So I'm really hopeful for that.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. You know, chaos seems to be a good descriptor for how kooky some of the past year's weather has been. How does chaotic weather affect future weather events? Does it have sort of a ripple effect? I remember the old expression about a butterfly's wings flapping somewhere and affecting weather somewhere else. I don't know if that there was anything to that or if it was just one of those things people said. But what does chaos portend for the future? Or can you extract anything from that?
Well, I guess I'll take the first stab at that. And yeah, the what's called Lorenz's butterfly, I think he mentioned that in the 1950s, and a really great thought experiment about, you know, what happens in one part of the world may ultimately affect everything else. And that's really why weather and climate models in many ways are really challenging, particularly weather models, because just a little bit of a difference in what we call the initial conditions could have a big impact, say, you know, 5 or 7 days down the road. But I do want to, you know, but the word chaos, you know, is a little bit tricky because when we use the term chaos or chaotic, it implies that we don't have an understanding of it and that it's random, for example. And, you know, I like to think of it more as a probability distribution and that unusual things instead of chaotic things and these unusual things, you know, sometimes do happen. You know, sometimes people do win the lottery. But as you shift that distribution, then those unusual events can become more common.
And turning to you, Rick, what are your thoughts about that? And also when we think about old records, big snowfalls, rain, cold, Fort Yukon hitting 100 degrees in 1915, how should people think about those events? Are those anomalies, or was it poor record keeping? What should we think? Is that just a distraction?
Yeah. So just to follow up first on Brian's remarks, the butterfly effect. It's one of the consequences of that small scale happenings in one part of the world can ultimately affect, say, the weather at a distant place sometime in the future. That is really fundamental and why there can never be accurate hour-to-hour, day-to-day weather forecasts infinitely in the future. We can't know the current conditions at a fine enough scale, no matter how much computer power we have. And so that is a fundamental limit on what weather forecasting can do. And that makes it in that sense very different than what we try to do with climate models, where we're not interested in what the exact atmospheric conditions are at 3 p.m. on July 18th, 2074. We're interested in the smoothed out statistics. Now, when we think about extreme events in the past, that it's very complicated. 100 degrees in Fort Yukon, is that even possible? Well, yeah, that probably is possible. We don't know much about how that thermometer was exposed. We do know from the other observations that were available at the time, it sure looks like it was a really hot week in interior Alaska. It certainly meets the test for plausible, but can we say beyond any doubt it was 100 degrees in Fort Yukon? Of course not, but it certainly looks reasonable. But because that the atmosphere can get into these really extreme conditions, even without climate change, even in a static climate, that getting all the pieces to fall in together is sometimes going to be a very rare event. And so the past is an important guide for us, but whether it's understanding how does 41 inches of snow in 11 days in Anchorage fall into historical context, could we ever see that again, or is to prepare for events that would be even more extreme than anything that we've seen in the past. I think that's really the value of these old records. Not going to get too much traction on debating whether it was really 98 or 100 in Fort Yukon, but knowing that extreme heat was possible in the early 20th century. It's even more possible now when all the pieces come together. That's the kind of thing that we need to think about as we prepare for extremes, both in our own experience and beyond.
All right. Well, we need to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion and get to some phone calls who are waiting, folks waiting to get on air with us as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about extreme weather today. And I want to say thanks to Rick Tolman, who had to leave for another presentation on climate and other information that he had to make. So thank you, Rick, for being with us for the majority of the show. Brian Brettschneider is still in the studio with me today. And I wanted to get to an email quickly here. Doug in Anchorage said, just wanted to bring attention to the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy website. He says it's an excellent set of graphics are available at the site that help to illustrate the long-term trends, very useful for educators and the general public. He attached an example, and I think we can probably link to that on our website at the Taco Alaska Post. So we'll get that done so folks can check that out. I wanted to get to the phones, too. We've got some callers stacked up here now. So let's go to Junior, who he's in the Kuskokwim area. Hello, Junior.
Hi, good morning. With world warming up, we see the sea levels rising all around the world, and we see the coastal cities all around the world will see the sea level rise. As it rises, we're seeing extreme weather getting worse every year, like the hurricanes down south and tornadoes. How are we going to adapt as humans to adjust with the sea levels rising? We need to adapt to move further in. With all these hurricanes that happen yearly, I don't see why we always go back and go rebuild New Orleans when next year it's going to get worse, you know? I just wanted to take that out. I'm getting lost. I'm sorry. You guys have a good morning.
Well, thank you, Junior. You raised some really important points there about the viability and the wisdom of rebuilding in areas that where the sea level is clearly rising. Storms and storm surge is becoming more dramatic and having more damage. So, Brian, when you think about the way forward, and what policymakers should be thinking and considering, and also what people themselves can do, because it seems so overwhelming. We're talking about global warming. So when an individual thinks about, well, what difference can I make if I shut a light off here or there? How do you talk to the public about both the people who are policymakers and how they should be thinking about what makes the most sense for the future, but also the public and what they can do so that they don't just feel helpless and overwhelmed?
That's a great question. And to answer the caller's point specifically, you know, sea level rise is really a tough problem, because what are the options to dealing with a rising sea? You know, they're pretty limited. You know, you could build a seawall. You could move to higher ground. Both of those are very expensive, very difficult. They upend people's lives, the community, cultural considerations. So it's really a problem. And in Alaska, we have this extra problem of we used to have, in our stormiest time of the year, especially on the West Coast, we used to have, sea ice kind of armoring the coastline, and now we don't for much of the fall season. And so it's particularly vulnerable, and much of the coast is permafrost, and so it's easily erodible. But as far as, with talking with people, again, people are, people are intelligent, and people understand that, like you said, it is global warming, and it is a global problem. And, everyone does have opportunities to make a difference, whether it is, individual decisions, or whether it is talking to their legislators or representatives. There's lots of ways that people can get engaged. And I do see people at times kind of throw their hands up and say, I'm just one person out of 8 billion. What can I do? If all 8 billion people said that, then nothing would ever change. And so, collectively, the more people kind of say, well, I'll just do maybe this one thing, little thing. Well, a bunch of little things can add up to a big thing.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. John is in Anchorage. Hello, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I've been interested in this global warming and impacts on weather, particularly in the Cook Inlet area and Anchorage. And about 20 years ago, I remember that the prediction was that global warming was going to generate a lot more rain and snow in Alaska, and the weather here was going to be considerably more like Seattle or Portland. But I did, on my own time, my own observations was about 2015, all of a sudden, the number of times I could get out fishing in my boat off of Cook Inlet, and this is just an inflatable, so I'm launching off the beach, was about 30% of the time, where you have to be able to get out over almost 70% of the time before that. And it's gotten worse every year. And this year, I noticed it's even more windy than it has been in the past. And I was curious about your probability model and how it relates to the global warming picture for this area. Is there any indication of where we may go in the future? Thank you.
Thanks for the call, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, the story really is the same everywhere. We expect it to get warmer, and we expect it to get wetter. And insofar as how that impacts, marine activities, that's one of the things that we try to communicate with people is that, it's not just about how much rain and snow we get. It's a global phenomenon. We have changes in ocean currents, ocean salinity, harmful algal blooms, PSP outbreaks. So there's lots of ways that this impacts people in different ways. As far as Anchorage goes, again, our average annual temperature, if you add in all the highs and lows, was about 34, and now it's over 37, and now there's no reason to expect it to stop. We expect it to keep on going, possibly a couple more degrees.
That seems huge to me. 3 degrees in how many years? 50, you said?
Yeah. From one day to the next, right, we experience temperatures that might be 0 one day and it might be 40 the next. And we say, 3 degrees, I can handle 3 degrees. But in many cases, 3 degrees, might be the difference between 30 inches of snow a year and 90 inches of snow a year when it's right around the freezing line. So 3 degrees is big. And it might make the difference between, tree line being at 2,000 feet or tree line being at 3,000 feet, or, the amount of glacial meltwater that's flowing in, say from the Matanuska Glacier into Kinnick Arm and Cook Inlet, which might be affecting fisheries, for example. So there's the whole series of cascading impacts. And as far as winds go, winds are one of those things where, people, especially if you're out in the marine areas, you experience winds all the time. And winds are really difficult to measure. So it is kind of tricky to say what has happened with winds. So that's kind of a to be continued question.
It all comes down to solar heating, right?
Well, in many ways, that's the ignition for everything. So it's the solar heating, but it's also then the atmospheric warmth. So now with the greenhouse gases, we're capturing more of that solar heating. And that literally is a fuel source for storms for winds, for precipitation. And so with more of it, that warmth, we expect, you know, more of these other events to occur.
We only have a couple minutes left. I wanted to get to an email question. Glenn writes, earlier in the program, I thought I heard one of your guests, and I think that was you, Brian, make an assertion that global political efforts were having an effect on climate change. What is your support for that assertion? What global efforts are actually reducing fossil fuel emissions overall, globally speaking? And how much overall have they been reduced in any recent years?
Well, so when I said that some of the worst climate projections are, we don't feel that those are likely to occur anymore. They are largely a result of policies that governments have pledged and have begun incorporating. So as it stands now, emissions are still increasing. But the trajectory based on what we expect to happen based on current pledges and, you know, a movement toward electrification of many of the parts of the transportation ecosystem, that's why we're expecting the rate of increase, the rate of change to the increase to start leveling off a little bit.
Brian, you live, eat, and breathe this stuff every day and are looking at the numbers all the time, watching the models. Are there still times that things happen that really surprise you, even though you're seeing what's coming? The forecasting for Murbach was spot on. But are there things that happen in those events that have shocked or surprised you?
Routinely. And, you know, a great example is the snow that occurred the first half of December in Anchorage. You know, we'd had that much snow in a 12-day period before. Like, I think it was in 1996 in November. We had actually a few inches more. But from a climate point of view, we really think of snow in terms of the water that's in it. And the amount of water that was in the snows in early December, you know, one event, I believe, had 1.4 inches give or take a little bit. I wouldn't have said that was possible. If you had asked me a week before, is that even possible? I would have said, that's not possible. But then it happened. And we had another event that had over an inch of liquid equivalent. And I wouldn't have said that was possible either. And so, you know, so we really do need to kind of shift our, you know, our perspective on what things are possible and what aren't. You know, 90 degrees in Anchorage in 2019, I would have said that is absolutely not possible at all. But it happened, and it was a good reading. All three stations in Anchorage all hit 90 degrees. And so so it is helpful, and but it also is tricky because we have a lifetime of experiences, and we base our, you know, we filter our observations through that lifetime of experience, and when things change, it's hard to change with it.
All right. Thank you so much to Brian Brettschneider, climate scientist with the National Weather Service, Alaska region. And also earlier in the program, we had Rick Toman on the line with us, climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy at the International Arctic Research Center at UAF. Thanks to our producer, Madeline Rose, our engineer, Chris Hyde, and on social media and the phones today, Michael Finelli helped us out. I'm Laurie Townsend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.